Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So what did happen at the Juvenile Justice Center on Thursday evening? There seems to be competing or conflicting stories about that. But one thing that was said in the aftermath, which I think highlights a huge problem, is that the mayor says there seemed to be a gap of a crisis intervention team on site at the center, which is a priority, and I'm actually working on that, and we have to make that happen. Is there a policy conflict there, and the mayor is providing the remedial action? Joining us on the line is Leon Cannizzaro, the New Orleans District Attorney. Leon, welcome to the show.
Hi. Okay, good morning, Newell. Thank you very much.
So, Leon, this has been bannered about not just this incident, but this whole approach as it relates to juvenile justice being therapeutic, being trauma-informed, and all of those issues by those that are progressive as it relates to this. This lack of accountability seems to run central through this theme of things. And then two people are asked, two inmates or two individuals at the Juvenile Justice Center, you're asked to move them to adult court. To me, the timing seems very, very suspicious. Did they cry uncle?
No, I don't know about that, but we certainly did get a call after this event on Thursday evening, which the police in some of their reports described as a riot situation where as many as seven inmates in the Juvenile Justice Center armed themselves with knives. They threatened to kill correctional officers and other inmates who were housed in their dorm. As I said, the thing lasted about 4 hours. The correctional officials in charge of the Juvenile Justice Center apparently were not able to control it. They called the police department to come in. The police ultimately had to bring in their SWAT team or their Special Operations Division officers to assist in trying to take this, to stop this thing. The sheriff was called in, the Orleans Parish Sheriff, I understand, had people over there also. And the EMS units were on standby in the event that the police were not able to detain and stop what was happening. This was a very, very sad set of circumstances. You also had the inmates who were in this juvenile justice center. They attempted to flood the dorm that they occupied by breaking the sprinkler system in the dorm. They covered themselves and they covered the floor with soap in order to make it more difficult for the officials who were to get control of the situation to detain them and stop what they were doing. I certainly think, you know, this begs the question that some of the individuals who are charged with these offenses, whose cases are transferred to the adult court and were given authority to do that because of these are some of the most dangerous individuals, they're charged with the most serious crimes, that they have requested that they be taken out of that juvenile justice center. Because, quite frankly, they are disrupting the entire operation and they're preventing some of the individuals who may be there on minor charges from getting the help or the services they need to not reoffend and not come back into this system again. So it, to some extent, is disturbing. We were a little upset when we saw that, you know, certain people in the administration said there was never any request. I want to credit the mayor, and I thank her very much. She did come out and say that there was a request by someone in the mayor's office. that we transfer at least two of the individuals who were involved in this event Thursday night, that they be transferred to the adult jail to wait for the disposition of their charge. One of them is charged with a murder, second-degree murder. He was transferred on Friday. The other one, we are awaiting the judge, who was unavailable Friday. He's charged with an armed robbery. We're waiting the judge to come in and hear that case so that he can hopefully be transferred also to the adult facility.
But when I look at this and I see that there's two vastly different stories being told, one that is presented in court by your assistants trying to accommodate a administration request that comes straight out of police reports, and then management of the Office of Youth and Families and this ultimate facility as well seem to be downplaying this whole thing and the severity of it. Is this just about trying to support this policy directive that they have, that they've made this hard push for these 17-year-olds to stay in juvenile facilities?
Well, I certainly think there are some. I think there are some in city government, especially certain members of our city council, who certainly do not want to see, under any circumstances, juveniles transferred to the adult jail for detention, or they do not want to see the juveniles transferred to the adult court for prosecution. So I certainly think there is, to some extent, a resistance on the part of some to try to say that we are going to make this work. And unfortunately, it has not worked. We are seeing that the juvenile, the detention center, the place that holds the juveniles, it's not large enough to hold the number of people that are coming into the system. The big misunderstanding is that if you transfer a juvenile to the adult jail, the Orleans Justice Center, that juvenile is going to be mixed up with the older, more violent offenders. And
right.
that's not the situation. The sheriff has done a very good job. I understand he has at least a facility in the Justice Center where they can separate 60 of the juveniles. He has space for 60 juveniles to be transferred to that facility. They can provide to them many of the same services that they receive at the Juvenile Justice Center. And it seems to me it makes good sense to transfer some of the more violent individuals, some of the more dangerous individuals who are charged with the serious charges. And again, we're talking about the murderers. We're talking about the rapists. We're talking about the attempt murderers. We're talking about the armed robbers. We're talking about the aggravated burglars, people who are involved in violent and vicious crimes. We're trying to separate them from some of the individuals who do not have as significant or serious a history so that, again, you can attempt to resolve the problems that each group may be suffering from.
Do we have any indication just as to how much damage was done within the facility?
I do not have that, Newell. I understand that the police did not make any arrests Thursday evening. We were notified again early Friday morning of this. We were told that they will be preparing reports. Much of this activity, I also understand, was captured on the body-worn cameras that the police use. And we will get a report, and they are going to consult with us as to who should be charged. And so we're not in a position to sort of assess all of the damage until we receive the report from the officers. I did hear, though, we were aware, as I said, that as far as the damage to the facility, I know some of the sprinkler systems were broken in the dorms in the attempt by the inmates to sort of flood the dormitory and prevent their apprehension by the law enforcement officials.
My information tells me this went out as a 21 miscellaneous call. As you well know, that's about as low-hanging
yes.
fruit as it gets on the hierarchy of calls. A two-minute response time by NOPD, they should be credited for that. EMS, the Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office, and SWAT is activated, and we're reluctant to say that things, unlike you, that said that things are dangerous and out of control and they were not quickly quelled, and still to this day, we're not saying that. And I just don't understand why. I just don't understand why where there's not a fair characterization. And I'm also very curious, is there going to be a follow-up investigation as to all of the criminal damage that went on there, and who's going to be held responsible for that?
Well, you know, like I said, we're going to await the police report. We're not going to be in a position to make any decisions as to who should be charged and for what, other than to say that the two individuals that were named to us with regard to their charges, who were involved in this and who were detained at the Justice Center, we are making efforts to transfer them to the adult facility until their case is disposed of. I'm sort of in a holding pattern because, again, some of the preliminary information we have received were from some of the police information that we have been provided with. This was verbal via telephone conversations, but we do not have any of the reports, and we haven't seen the body cameras, and I think that's going to tell us a whole lot. You know, I think it should be said that people involved with the Juvenile Justice Center, starting with the mayor, they did reach out. They reached out to me. They talked to me about it. They said that we're going to have to maybe do some things. We're going to have to look at the situation over there. I also spoke with the warden at the facility, Dr. Webster. We spoke to the superintendent, Sean Ferguson, who was very supportive of some of the activities and actions that we took. Ms. Tanisha Stevens, also from the mayor's office, also reached out to us. So, again, we have been in communication with them. I think that's a very positive sign. I hope that we can build on that. I think, like you say, it's extremely important that we do the right thing over there, because I think the welfare of this city is greatly dependent upon it. You know, I said earlier this year that I think the biggest problem that right now that we face in the city of New Orleans is our juvenile crime problem, and we can't just turn a blind eye to that. We are going to have to be vigilant. We're going to have to get involved. We're going to have to stop some of the things that are happening on the street, because it affects the public safety of the decent and law-abiding citizens of this community.
And we're not the only city that's facing this. If you listen to what the mayor in Chicago is saying about the challenges that they have there, they were talking about low bonds on people walking around with semi-automatic weapons and getting out for $100. When you look at what's going on in Philadelphia, and if you look at what's going on in Baltimore, things seem to look very similar to what we're discussing here today.
You're absolutely right. Look, we have experienced some of the individuals who've been released, some of the adult offenders, and as well as the juveniles who have been released on very, very low or no bonds. And we find that, as you would expect, they are going out and they are committing other crimes. If there are no consequences, then there is no reason for them to stop their criminal activity. And we find that if they don't get what they want, they will become violent. They are armed in many of these cases. They are dangerous. And I know we dispelled the myth that these auto burglaries or the pulling on the door handles that we saw in just about every neighborhood in the city of New Orleans was not considered a violent crime. Well, you know, we certainly changed our tune with regard to that. Those people who were saying it wasn't a violent crime, when they saw two individuals, two women, both being killed as a result of people who were supposedly engaging in these nonviolent offenses. So, again, it is a very serious problem, and I guess that to a large extent, law enforcement, I find in many areas, is quite frankly under siege. I have talked about some of the problems that
frustrated, for sure.
You're absolutely right, Newell, and I think that goes. I've talked about some of the frustrations they have experienced with regard to the consent decree. As you know, the officers in this city are not allowed to participate in chases. They are not allowed to engage in the proactive patrolling, and the consent decree sort of mires the officers down in mounds and mounds of paperwork, not to mention the fact that it's an $11 million a year price tag that the city of New Orleans has to pay for this, and
absolutely,
that money can certainly be going into other areas as far as attempting to rehabilitate or support law enforcement in other ways.
D.A. Leon Canizara, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate you sharing this with us today.
Thank you, Newell. I appreciate
it. We'll be right back. We want to hear from you. 260-1870 or text 870-870. We'll be right back. You know, when you look around the country and you see these issues, they tend to repeat themselves, and we're playing these progressive policies, and we're looking at those that want to be DA and be progressive DAs and really be more social activists than to do the just the blocking and tackling of prosecution as a follow-up to investigations that are being conducted by the police each and every day. We've had a number of folks that are out there talking about, well, we're not going to charge people for this. We're not going to charge people for that. We're not going to do this. We're not going to do that. Says who? Why? Did the public vote on that? Did the public vote on we want to be less safe? Who developed this mindset that we don't want to have anybody being held accountable? Now, this is the outcome of this mindset. So let's replay it. A call goes out. Two law enforcement agencies respond. They call, the initial responders call for SWAT. EMS typically comes out with SWAT as well. 3+ hours before they clear the call. And the response is no big deal. Nothing that we should be concerned of. But yet the next morning, the administration makes the request of the DA to move two juvenile arrested subjects from the Juvenile Justice Center to an adult jail. Now, remember, these are the same folks that have wanted the elimination or reduction of violent juvenile offenders from being treated in the adult system. Well, if that's what you desire, you should make sure that you have everything in place prior to achieving what you've been fighting so hard to accomplish. And the thing that I find the most disturbing in all of this is that they actually come out and say there seems to be a gap of a crisis intervention team on site at that center. Are you kidding me? This is what you have been fighting for, saying that it was going to provide safety and security and in the best interest of the juvenile. But that's not what's happening. We'll be right back. We want to hear from you. Stay with us. I don't know about you, but I am just a little bit troubled about the way that this was handled and more so the information around it. It seems as though we're trying to be very protective of a policy, of a position that we're taking here, as opposed to just dealing with the truth and let the chips fall where they may. The DA has been very proactive on this issue, and there have been those in the city that have been on the opposite side. And quite frankly, he's predicted this. Here it is. It's gone on in other jurisdictions around the country. And this is what we have to deal with. If this is what you desire, if you want to manage some of the more violent criminal population in this city, you better be prepared. They're not coming in to play tiddlywinks. Many of these young offenders have been in the offender business their entire juvenile life, but yet we don't want to talk about it. From that perspective, no, we would rather talk about it in the as a therapeutic model, as trauma informed. Whose trauma? The community or the offender? And where's the accountability? I'm going to tell you right now, folks, if there are not charges as it relates to the individuals responsible for committing criminal damage at that facility, then we know exactly where this is all going. The accountability stream that should be in place in the criminal justice system, where whether that be adults and or juveniles, is of no moment. We will know then that accountability's out. That we're not worried about accountability. We're not worried about them tearing up our facilities that we're spending taxpayer money on to try and remediate and rehabilitate those that have offended, who have already wreaked havoc on our society and our community. We will send the message loud and clear that you can do what you want, when you want, how you want. you don't have to worry about any accountability. To think that now, only now, after this event, that we recognize that we don't have a crisis intervention team. I hope they had a plan, that they just failed to implement it. But we don't have a team in order to deal with this, and that we need to call out the NOPD SWAT team. It's not like they're stretched to the max already. So while we were consuming all of these assets and resources, I'm sure there was a backup in calls for service in the respective districts. Seems all very therapeutic to me. And we've yet, hopefully, I hope that there will be an after-action report that's given. We don't have to reveal any of the juveniles' names because we know how everybody feels about that. That is a big, 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 huge, huge problem to reveal those names. Well, in this case, the individual who was charged with second-degree murder, Latrell Alexis, a 16-year-old who turned 17 in October, his name has now been revealed. He shot and killed a 14-year-old, Jermichael Frith, in Hollygrove last February. And obviously now they feel like he's responsible for something that was going on in this facility. And hopefully, in the next chapter, in the after action of what went on in that facility, we're going to see some criminal charges filed. We don't need to know who. We don't want to cross that line. But somebody should be held accountable for consuming 3+ hours of police officers' time, the call out of SWAT, EMS, and everybody else, the DA having to get involved, the adult system having to get involved. It should not be that they walk away from this and not face some sanction for this conduct. You want to send a message loud and clear within that therapeutic environment over there? This is good therapy to know that you are going to be held accountable. We'll be right back after the break. Want to hear from you, 260-1870 or text 870-870. This is Newell on WWL. We're back. Let's go to Jim out in Magnolia. What say you, Jim?
Hey, I was just wondering if you had any empirical data on that consent decree.
As it relates to this juvenile issue, I don't know that there's anything in the consent decree that is addressed relative to this. This is a move that had been requested of the state legislature. They passed a bill. Now those individuals go into the juvenile arena, and it's something that has been talked about for years. It finally passed. They have it. Now they have the responsibility for same. And some of these progressive ideas keep coming about. In fact, Jim, I'll just make the following observation. I mean, when you look at some of the presidential candidates, Andrew Yang, he's been promising all along that he's going to mass pardon those who are in prison for nonviolent marijuana offenses. And so we keep talking about this. So how many are actually in federal jail right now for just possession of marijuana? How many you think?
Probably not too many. I mean, they might go to jail for a month or two, but you know more about that.
The most recent data where they've completed looking at all individual crimes comes out of 2017. So they looked at all of this, and you know what? There were 92 people in the federal system that were only there for marijuana possession. In fact, 99% of federal drug offenders that are sentenced and go to jail, it's for trafficking, not for simple possession. But we talk about this as though it's a huge problem that exists out there, and the numbers just don't bear it out. And we continue to do this day in and day out on any number of issues to try and reach some overarching ideological viewpoint, and we're just completely skewing the data as it relates to all of these issues.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I certainly agree that most of the crimes involving drugs are breaking and entering, stealing, whatever, you know, that's what they go to jail for.
And actually, in the entire jail system, of having a component part of their sentence having to deal with drugs, accounted for 81,900 people.
Right.
That they had some kind of drug component, but with other charges.
Right.
So we keep talking about this, like keep talking about this. And the last time, so I started checking in my jail when I was the sheriff, how many simple possession of marijuana cases we had there. You know typically what the number was? Zero, zero, nada, none. Did not exist. Jim, thanks so much for calling. Got to get to a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. And let me correct what I said earlier. I misspoke. It's actually worse than the way that I presented it. At the federal level, 47.5% of prisoners, which is 81,900, were serving a sentence of any length at the end of September 2016 after being convicted of a drug offense as their most serious crime. But remember, 99% of those that are sentenced for trafficking, not for simple possession. So the vast majority, almost, it's statistically insignificant of those others that are even charged and sentenced to time for possession. It's for trafficking. And the U.S. Sentencing Commission showed that in 2017, out of 20,000 drug convictions, and remember, 99% of those are for trafficking, less than 100 people were sentenced for marijuana possession in the federal system. But we talk about this mass incarceration situation as though we're completely focused. There's a disproportionate impact number as it relates to marijuana. We're trying to create this marijuana dialogue, right, wrong, or indifferent, about whether or not marijuana should be legalized. But it's not for the reasons that they're talking about, that there's all this incarceration that is going on. So that's the situation in a nutshell from a statistical standpoint. Let's go to Elwin uptown. What say you, Elwin?
Hey, man, I don't think no one should be arrested for marijuana. I think it should be not criminalized. I mean, I think it should be criminalized. I don't think no one should be arrested for it. And I give you my reason for it.
Look, well, on simple possession, turn your radio down, Elwin. On simple possession, most jurisdictions don't arrest. In fact, in Jefferson Parish, since the 80s, we issued misdemeanor summons for misdemeanor possession. We didn't arrest. Unless there was other reason to, meaning other charges, or, you know, we couldn't identify the individual, didn't have an ID, or things of that nature. We actually frowned upon bringing people in and jailing them pending the charges. We would give them a misdemeanor summons.
Well, I mean, I think it shouldn't be anybody shouldn't go at all. I mean, it shouldn't even have a misdemeanor for that. It should be legal.
So you're in favor of decriminalization, making it all full-blown legal. Well, we're not there yet.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that, you know, this issue is they're blowing it out of proportion. Got a text here that says, what about state jails? At one point in time, we were checking the state jail, and there were very few people there as well that were serving time for possession of marijuana. So the numbers just don't bear it out. And they keep trying to create an issue about this, that it's not as big an issue as you would think. So I'll go along with Andrew Yang. Give the 92 people a mass pardon. If you promise not to talk about it anymore, and let's move on to something that's a little bit more meaningful in the end.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.